Hi, I'm Rob Vanstone, and welcome to the, I'm glad I can say, the season opening edition of the Rider Rumblings video podcast. I am beside Murray McCormick, the New York Post football writer, and we're going to discuss, I think, a question that I get everywhere, I'm sure Murray gets everywhere. How are the Riders going to do this season? Murr, how are the Riders going to do this season?
I wish I could see it bounce around. I don't think second's out of reach, second in division. Are we both going to agree that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are the class of the league, class of the division?
Yeah. So, you know, one hit could change all that, but looking at it now, I just don't see how there's any other selection.
Yeah, I don't think we can go. Like, they've done everything right in the offseason. They've gotten through, other than Jackson Jeffcoat, supposedly minor injury in practice, they've gotten through training camp healthy, just like everyone, most teams have. So you really have to say Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And then I do, and it's me, so it's not just a homer thing. I think the Riders have a solid and not only important spots, except in the questions, which are, you know, the backup quarterback, the seventh Canadian receiver, who's going to be the two DBs and stuff, which are important questions, but they're not overwhelming. Like in the old days, like who's going to be the quarterback and what's going to happen with the offensive line. So I think they have questions that need to be answered, but they aren't ones that can keep them from getting to the playoffs. And maybe who knows what happens after that. But I like a second place out of the Riders, Rob. I don't know what you think. Do you think much higher than that?
I think it's them in Calgary for second. And I'm giving the nod to Calgary right now for all that's worth. I picked Winnipeg to be last year. So that may color everything I say from here on in. But the question facing the Rough Riders is no different than the one question facing the Rough Riders throughout last season. Can they protect Cody Fajardo? And until Saturday, when they play host to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, I don't think we'll be able to get an accurate read on whether that offensive line has indeed been refurbished to the point where Cody Fajardo can have some comfortability in the pocket and to the point where there can be a reliable running game. I look at Calgary, and I think they've got a more solid foundation in front of Bo Levi Mitchell or Jake Meyer. And I remain to be convinced that the Rough Riders offensive line is fixed. I'm not sure that it has the requisite personnel among the starting five, nor am I convinced that there is the necessary depth in the event that misfortune should befall one of those five. So I could be proven wrong. I was proven wrong in my predictions about 3 minutes into the 2021 season. So, until I see that offensive line is better, I give the nod to Calgary for two and the Riders for three. But it's almost like there's two tiers in the West Division, Murr. There's Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, and Calgary in one three team group, and then Edmonton and Calgary. Edmonton, BC, maybe fighting it out for a crossover or something. But that's how I see it. There's sort of that group of three that is either elite or has a chance to be above average, and then there's the other two that are should get pretty good draft picks next year.
And it's also interesting, you mentioned those two other, you mentioned BC and Edmonton. They have question marks at quarterback. Not Nathan Rourke is the guy, but he's a Canadian guy. And we got to see, he's essentially a rookie. Got to see what he's going to do. And I don't know, who's Edmonton's quarterback this hour? I can't figure out who's going to be. I think I didn't read the latest on the Eskimos, but Elks, sorry.
Elks, not bad. You're fine, $10 for that one. I know. I'll be fine, $10 later on in the podcast.
But their starting quarterback? It looks like it's Nick Arbuckle, but there's been enough Jonesy-isms in there to sort of throw some confusion into the overall picture about who's going to be the starter. So, you know, that's one thing. And I think when we look at the top three teams, there's stability at quarterback. And I really think that's a key, obviously. Captain Obvious checking in here. But that stability at quarterback's so huge, even though the Bombers are one hit away from being – who is their backup? Was it Matthew? Do you remember?
Did they go with Prokop or did they go with Drew Brown?
Yeah,
Prokop or Drew Brown. Both of them look pretty impressive in the preseason game here. Prokop, I'm fine $10. Dakota Prokop threw some really nice passes. I was really impressed with him. So they might not have the same burning questions that the Rough Riders do at number two quarterback, but there's such a precipitous drop off anytime you lose your number one guy. Perhaps Calgary being the exception, Edmonton being the exception, because who knows what their number two situation is going to be. But you go from Cody Fajardo to that which is untested. That's a pretty steep decline. So Cody Fajardo has got to stay healthy for 18 games.
Someone did it in 19 pretty nicely, though. Came back from being, I was reading some old stories from back then. Basically, we referred to Cody as the short yardage specialist in almost every reference until that game in Hamilton. And all of a sudden, you go from a journeyman career backup to the starter. So some days.
Yeah, even going into week two in 2020, in 2019, it wasn't certain that Cody Fajardo was going to start. They'd thrown Isaac Harker's name out there and it was bandied about. Actually, Isaac Harker was supposed to play a bit in Ottawa in week two.
Yeah,
but then Cody Fajardo went out and had that amazing game in Ottawa. And that was pretty much it for the quarterback debate. And there still isn't one in Saskatchewan. The only debate is, and I hate to be so repetitive, but can they protect him? I still don't know.
How much pressure is on
You've watched
Cody?
This team through. Yeah. There'll be a lot of pressure on Cody if they can't protect him. I mean, it's not dissimilar to that which Darian Durant faced in 2013. And not dissimilar to that which the team faced in 2013. If you look at it, the 2013 entering the 2013 season, the Rough Riders had the heartbreaking playoff loss in Calgary in 2012, the Romby Bryant game, and they'd lost back to back Grey Cups by a combined 4 points to the Montreal Alouettes. So there was that hanging over their head. Well, look at what's happening with the Rough Riders now. They've lost. Back-to-back West Finals. One of them was decided on the final play. The other one was decided well into the final quarter. And so I'm not sure it's a different scenario facing the team, nor is there a different scenario facing the starting quarterback. Can Cody Fajardo, or can the Rough Riders with Cody Fajardo quarterbacking them, ascend to that next step with a Grey Cup at home? It's not really that different from 2013, except when I looked at that 2013 Ryder team, and you looked at it in training camp, even from the outside of training camp, you could look at that 2013 team and say, this is what the lineup's going to be. There was very little at issue going into training camp about who was going to start where. Whereas there were a lot more questions about this team coming into 2022 and heading into the season opener. I think there's still some questions that require resolution about whether the pieces that they have put in there are the right ones. So compare the 2013 Rough Riders to the 2022 Rough Riders at this stage. And I think it was reasonable at this stage 9 years ago to portray the Rough Riders as a legitimate Grey Cup contender. There weren't the looming questions that there are now. There's some strengths, obviously, to this football team. I think the defense is going to carry the day. But when you look at the pressure exerted on this team, it's Cody Fajardo 2022 is Darian Durant 2013. But Darian Durant had a great offensive line behind him, in front of him, and a great running back, and a receiving core that was so good that it was difficult to find playing time for G. Roy Simon. They don't have that now.
Yeah, very, very true, and that's, I don't know, because that's your history. You kind of notice that kind of stuff, but you're very correct on that. And I know I just kind of get, but I'm excited to see the front seven on this team. I think that's a major league defensive line, and let's go All American, like. And maybe use some Canadian there to fill in whatever. But boy, between look at the defensive ends. AC Leonard led this league in sacks. Charleston Hughes, an off year in Toronto, sack leader for seems every time. Pete Robertson, maybe the ex guard, Keon Adams. Four good defensive ends. The interior, Garrett Marino, Anthony Lanier the second, and a host of other guys, and then whoever they get in there. So good.
What if a Nicholas Daly squeezes himself in there situationally too?
Oh, that'd be great if he could. But
and that linebacking core, they've got an embarrassment of riches there.
And it's
even with Micah Tights being injured.
Yeah, like Larry Dean has looked great at Will, and I mentioned this before. I kind of think Will's going to be changing more to not that sort of the larger bodied run stopping kind of Canadian. It's going to be more of a secondary, more of a defensive back with changing of the hash marks, going to have the ability to cover. And Larry Dean has looked good in practice. He looked good in the preseason game. So here's a guy, tore his Achilles. We kind of wonder about that a little later in life, whether he can bounce back, but he appears to have bounced back nicely. And even if it's not Larry Dean, maybe they can move Nelson Lacombo in there, who's a great safety for the U of S and defensive back and another Achilles tear guy. Darnell Sankey is so much fun to watch in practice. I compare him to him, but not at the same level Weston Dressler was when he practiced. I've always said, I've never seen a player practice harder than Weston Dressler. Every rep meant something. Darnell Sankey, even the reps he's not even on the field mean something because he's always talking to the guys. He's always doing things, excuse me, to talk to people. So he has been very impressive. What a great sign.
You need some Pepto-Bismol.
I think so.
Maybe we can sell a sponsorship for this podcast. Sorry, go ahead. So fizz.
Sankey was a great signing, and so was Derek Moncrief. You know, Edmonton's Defensive Player of the Year of only 9 games. So really good things in the linebacking corps. Might it be the best in the league? I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better one right now, but it's early in the season. But I'm excited about that front seven. I think they're going to make life miserable for any quarterback they play.
Yeah, and it also alleviates some of the pressure on the secondary. Well, if you look at Lucas Purifoy being gone, you look at Ed Gainey being gone, and there are some questions about the secondary. But if the opposing quarterback doesn't have a lot of time to throw, and given the composition of that front seven, you would think the pressure exerted on rival quarterbacks will be consistent and rather bothersome. I think that also, in a way, covers up a deficiency or a perceived deficiency in the secondary. And there's also some very good personnel there. Having Mike Edem back for an entire year will be huge. I don't think Nick Marshall gets nearly the credit he deserves as a terrific cornerback. So they've got some pieces in the secondary that I think can contribute and that are proven. But that front seven, I think, is going to carry the day. And if you look at the strength of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers the last 2 seasons when they've won the Grey Cup, it's been that carnivorous front seven that they've had. And the Rough Riders, I think, can certainly rival what Winnipeg has. I look at those teams, and so much of the discussion comes back to Winnipeg, as you basically said at the outset. If I look at the defenses, I don't see that the Rough Riders' defense is necessarily that inferior to the Bombers at all. But it's that offense, and it's that offensive line. Zach Collaros pretty much knows he's going to have a certain level of protection. I'm not sure Cody Fajardo can yet have that degree of assurance behind the offensive line. And so the Bombers, you know, games are won and lost in the trenches. It's been said a million times. And if you look at that as the barometer for evaluating the West Division, Winnipeg is so strong on both sides of the line of scrimmage. The Rough Riders are very strong, very proven on one, very dangerous on one. But the other one, there's still that question. And Winnipeg is going to set the bar for everybody throughout the league. But you look at the Rough Riders compared to Winnipeg, and that to me seems to be the most, I think, the area in which there's the greatest potential divergence in terms of quality. Bombers offensive line versus Riders offensive line. I think the Riders have a better receiving corps than Winnipeg.
That's I was just going to jump in there.
I honestly think the Riders have a better quarterback than Winnipeg. You know, if you put Cody Fajardo behind Winnipeg's offensive line, I think Cody Fajardo's the MOP last year, not Zach Collaros. I think, but yeah, go ahead, Mur. I mean, I look at that receiving corps and the promise it has, and it could be quite explosive. Given the luxury of time,
and we're early. Hey, everyone wins in June. You know, it's not. So think about it. They got Duke Williams.
Not the Edmonton Oilers lately. No, sorry.
That was tough. I was cheering for the Oilers last night. I really wanted to see another game. It's so much fun to watch hockey like that when everything's on the line. Anyway, what are we talking about? Yeah, we're talking about Duke Williams, Shaq Evans, and Keon Schaefer-Baker. And that's a good core of receivers. Duke Williams sets the stage for that very nicely. But that's a good goal. And then you throw maybe possibility of, you know, who's going to be the Justin McInnes or maybe Jacob Prohl. They have some options there. So I really like the receiving core because of the foundation of those 3 soft guys. Now, can Corey get the ball to him? That's the big question. Can he go down past deep passes? That's kind of the other part I was going to ask you. What kind of relationship do you think we're going to see on the field between Cody Fajardo and Jason Maas? Are we going to see the long, deep passes that are such key make the CFL so exciting? Are we going back to screens and intermediate passes and things that
I think it goes back to the offensive line. If Cody Fajardo can get enough time to throw deep, then I'm sure he will. But Jason Maas took a lot of heat last year, and I think with some justification, but I think he also had to scheme around the team's obvious deficiencies. There's no point prescribing a 7-step drop and a 40-yard pass if you can't be certain that the quarterback is going to have time and that the receiver won't have time to get open. So I think to a degree, he was encumbered by the nature of the offense and that porous offensive line. So I hate to be so redundant, but if that offensive line can be what they want it to be, then I think that gives Jason Moss some more flexibility too. And it isn't necessarily going to be a succession of horizontal passes or horizontal passes the way it looked last season. And maybe they can, maybe they won't be throwing 5-yard passes on second and seven this year. I think the running game is something too that has to really be considered, because the Rough Riders running game hasn't scared anybody. And if they have a running game, and again, I go back to 2013 and Corey Sheets, if they have a running game that has to be respected to the degree, and Winnipeg's running game has been respected. You look at Calgary Stampeders and Kadeem Carey, look at Montreal and William Stanback, etc. If you have a running game that has to be respected and that isn't just merely there as it was last season, then that opens up so much for Jason Moss in terms of play action. It keeps the defenses guessing. So I think the running game is an important consideration in this overall discussion. And we won't know until Saturday if they have a running game.
Do you think we're being, if you should be more specific with the offensive line, saying the interior with the two guards of Logan Ferland and Evan Johnson and Dan Clark are okay? Is it the tackles that have to be so much better?
You think maybe Evan Johnson had at least a rough start to last season. I don't think he was necessarily what they were expecting. I think he got Dan Clark battled injuries last year, but was still pretty good. Logan Ferland, I think, was exceeded all expectations. Now, you got to remember the standard has been set at that position by Brendan Labatt. Yeah, so left tackle, Taron Vaughn is fine if Taron Vaughn is fine. We won't know until Saturday, or at least get any answers until Saturday, as far as whether his shoulder can withstand the rigors of a CFL game. They mothballed him during the preseason. Right tackle, who knows? And we could say that at various stages last season. If you look at 2013, Xavier Fulton, Brendan Labatt, Dominic Picard. Chris Best and right tackle Ben Heenan. So, I mean, they had an absolute fortress up front. They don't have that now. They don't have anything approaching that now. And to what extent will that affect Cody Fajardo? Will that affect Jason Moss? Will that affect the fortunes of the Rough Riders? That to me is still the key question hovering over this team.
Well, you have to remember 13 that old Brendan Tamman built a pretty good team up for that run of the playoffs. Eh? Doesn't get, I don't think he gets enough credit for what he did to get that team.
No, he had some circumstances to his advantage that Jeremy O'Day doesn't have now too. There weren't 1-year contracts back then. So you got to remember then the foundation for that 2013 team was laid in 2012. Brendan Labatt and Dominic Picard on the first day of free agency, they drafted Ben Heenan and they brought in Corey Sheets in 2012 and Taj Smith. So there were some important foundational pieces laid. Whereas the 1-year contracts really make it difficult to do some of the things that Brendan Tamman was able to do. For example, signing John Schick right before training camp. They signed John Schick for below market in 2013, but the quid pro quo there was, we'll make that up to you in 2014. Yeah. Chris Getzlaff played for a lot less in 2013 than he did in 2014. So because of the multi-year contracts, Brendan Tamman was able to play a bit of a shell game and play some gymnastics with the figures. Whereas he wasn't able with the prevalence of the 1-year contracts, you can't front load a contract, you can't back load a contract. And so Jeremy O'Day is playing in a bit of a different ballpark than Brendan Tamman was 9 years ago, or 10 years ago for that matter.
Hey, literally a different ballpark, because it'll be a new Mosaic Stadium too, Rob.
Yes. Made a putt without that even grand. Knowing that. Now we need a new baseball stadium.
Well, I guess that's true. We're kind of do a little speculating. There was a sparse crowd for the preseason game, and we gone through the whole reasons for that. What's your anticipation for the regular season home opener against the
Tigers? I am so curious about that one, Mer. I am as curious about the attendance as I am about the game. A lot of people, it's pretty easy to write off the sparse crowd on the basis of myriad factors. There's no excuses on Saturday. It's the season opener. It's a Saturday night. It's a meaningful game. They haven't change the scheduling for the football game as was the case when the Rough Riders played their home preseason game. All of the factors that worked against even a passable attendance on May 31st are no longer in place for this one. I'm sure that the announced crowd will be fine in terms of the number of seats sold. They'll be in the 20s, I'm sure. How many people are going to show up? I am so curious, and I can't even hazard a guess on that one.
I can't think. I don't even know it's somebody. And I just know they sold about 26,000 season tickets. Well, no, we assume they sold that many tickets, so that's always kind of the base figure for attendance. But you know, we touch. Is there still, you know, it's still COVID out there? There's still people concerned, and I really think COVID, like $2.06 a gallon gas out there, or liter for gas right now. People are looking at their money a little differently now. I think there's going to be a different way, and I think the CFL's got to deal with that. This is a league, it's a budget league, and people don't go to every game, but it costs money, lots of money to go to a game.
Not only it costs money to get to the game. I put $60 of gas in my car yesterday and didn't fill it. That's the first time that's ever happened. But I was walking around the concourse before the Winnipeg game, and somebody's walking around with a sign on their back saying beer, $9. I mean, it's not just the cost of getting to the game. It's not just the cost of getting into the game. It's the cost of the concessions once you get there. And I think the overall pricing really needs to be reviewed, especially in light of the economic times we face due to inflation, due to gas being up there, and due to the financial consequences that are still being wrought as a result of COVID. And you just wonder to what extent all those circumstances are going to conspire to affect the crowds this season. Maybe not at all. I remember the days when preseason games were an automatic sellout and a legit sellout. And now we're thinking how many people are going to be there for the Hamilton game. I am just so intrigued by that. I'm glad you mentioned it because it's really something that's making my three brain cells work lately.
Well, I've always said, if you can afford to get drunk at a Rider game, you got too much money, buddy. Because I don't know how people afford it. And I think I bought a $16 sub there the other day before the game. Just, it's so good though, but you know,
with bun, it probably costs more. Sorry. Well, I mean, you can buy a beer for $9 at a Rider game. It's a concession. The concessions is $8, but the roving beer salesman is $9 or salesperson. Yeah. I paid $12 for a ticket to a Red Sox game last night. That's not even the cost of the facility fee at a Rider game. So you can spend $12 for 3 hours of entertainment at a Regina Red Sox game. Or you can spend more than that on a facility fee. You can spend 3/4 of that on a beer. You can spend more than that on your sub, etc. I just wonder if the overall price points, and this is something the sports industry has been addressing and facing for a few years now. I just wonder if that's prohibitive. I'm not sure if the interest in the team is declining. I'm just wondering if the practicality of going to games, the financial feasibility is being affected by the times in which we live. And well, COVID factors into that as well, or at least should.
We went to a Toronto hockey game in October and I spent $16 on a craft beer because I wanted to try. But so you have one instead of having two.
So, have you paid it off yet?
No, I haven't looked at it. I won't tell you about our trip to Vegas.
Well, you have to pay for your beer on installments. You know you got an issue.
Exactly, so. Yeah. I think we're both said that we're excited that football is here. We're excited to see a full season, 14 games. We always felt not cheated, but it just wasn't quite right with 14 games last year. We're always doing that kind of stuff. I think an 18-game schedule, health of Cody Fajardo, and I think we can hammer that a little bit harder. He has to stay healthy.
They have to keep him healthy.
Yeah,
and Cody has to keep himself healthy. And likes to play with abandon, but if he gets hurt, their hopes of a Grey Cup championship are pretty much abandoned. So.
Yeah.
Well, we should wrap up. How's that for a smooth and abrupt conclusion to this podcast? Thanks for doing this again, Murr. I just got to read this little thing at the end, or face banishment from all Leader Post properties. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and a 5-star rating. It helps us grow the podcast. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to send us a question, you can email Rob, I believe that's my name, at rvanstone@postmedia.com, and we'll read it on the show. You can follow me on Twitter, at Rob Vanstone, or Murray, at Murray LP. And if you have something to say about our Murray Mandrick column, don't send it to at Murray LP, because that's not Murray Mandrick's address. But Murray's been getting some of the McCormick mail lately, so keep that in mind.
It's kind of funny. Hey, we didn't get no dog shots. Where's Candy? She's not here.
Candy is Crisula took Candy for a walk, so I was expecting Candy to candy bomb me during the duration of this podcast, but it hasn't yet happened. So
all right, next time there'll be time to see her. So again.
We'll do this next week, and hopefully there'll be lots of canine shots. with my face, maybe there already have been. For Murray McCormick, I'm Rob Vanstone. Thanks so much for your time today. And we'll talk to you next week discussing the long-awaited Rough Rider season opener, Hamilton Tiger Cats, 5 p.m. Mosaic Stadium Saturday. Thanks so much. Take care and have a great day.